And a very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07, and this is Midday Matters Financial Focus here on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, very happy to be with you on this Election Day 2012. And with me in studio, of course, it's Susan Burns. Good afternoon, Susan.
Hi, Sean. I got my chatting energy warmed up this morning out of polling place with a whole lot of people at it.
We were hearing a lot of folks, especially those who went right around 6 o'clock, 6:30, stood in line for quite a while, 40 minutes, hour-long waits, which I suppose is a very good sign. People are getting out and voting.
Exercising that civic right. So that's good. I was part of the 9 o'clock rush, but they got us through, and I'm glad to be here today. We've got a couple different topics we're going to catch up with, and I think we've got some good information to offer people.
That's right. We're going to spend the first part of the program checking in with Ball State economist Michael Hicks, and a bit later on we'll check in on the latest from the Greater Fort Wayne Chamber of Commerce, so you'll want to stick around. And we do want you to join the conversation today as well. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters.
It is. And so, listeners, today is your Ask an Economist Day. We have with us on the line, Sean, Professor Michael Hicks from Ball State Center for Business and Economic Research. Did I get that right, Mike?
You did, Susan. Thank you. Good to be with you both.
Thanks. And so what's up with Indiana's economy these days? How's our labor market? So let's start with that.
Well, obviously an area of big issue for everybody. The recovery looked really good in Indiana. So 2010, early part of 2011, really through the winter of 2012, I think a lot of us were fairly optimistic. Sometime around January, February, we sort of peaked in our growth rates nationally. Indiana continued to grow up until the beginning of summer, but I think what we've seen really since May is a significant slowing of the national and state economy, and with job creation numbers well beneath what we need them to be to drive the unemployment rate down. And I think a lot of evidence also that personal incomes are shrinking. And so this looks to me an awful lot like the beginning of a second recession, some 3 years after the last one formally ended. And I think what's really driving this today is extraordinary uncertainty with regard to European economic performance. They're in a recession, with some countries in very lengthy recession, maybe even a depression for places like Portugal and Greece, with even the very strong economies of, say, Germany and the United Kingdom slowing into recession. So I think that's dragging on a state like Indiana, which exports an awful lot to Europe, and I think we're beginning to feel it throughout labor markets in Fort Wayne and Muncie and Indianapolis and elsewhere.
Yeah, and are there particular segments of the labor market that are stronger or weaker?
Indeed they are, with Indiana being really the most manufacturing-intensive state in the country. We lost an awful lot of jobs, perhaps not as many as we should have during the Great Recession. Given how bad the national economy was, we held in there pretty well. If you'd asked an economist to predict what would happen if the national unemployment rate pushed 11%, most of us would have said, oh, Indiana easily been 14-15% unemployment, and that just didn't materialize, like it did in Michigan, for example. So I think we were fairly lucky there. Unfortunately, we zoomed back, I guess, fortunately, regained most of those manufacturing jobs. But as our overall population grew a tad bit over that recession, we seem to see more and more jobs, as we typically have, moving in areas beyond manufacturing, geographically to larger metropolitan areas. Obviously, that's good for Fort Wayne. But I think over the past 6 months, we've seen job stalling occurring in manufacturing. We've seen an awful lot of government jobs continue to decline as funding for state, local government, and for school systems has shrank a tad bit. And so I think that's sort of the occupational picture that we're seeing more jobs, you know, in sales and professional services and management. We're seeing more employment in, you know, sort of spreading throughout the state. So we saw some more growth in the southern part than perhaps the northern part of the state. And so it's not a uniform shock to one sector of the economy like we saw back in 82, 83 when we were last visited by a very deep recession.
I'd like to invite our listeners, if you have a question for Michael Hicks, do give us a call and share your thoughts, 260-452-1185, or you can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. Professor Hicks, not to get into a partisan stance here, because we're avoiding that, especially today. But markets like certainty, and I'm curious from your perspective. I mean, whether one candidate or another is elected, I would have to think that having some sort of settlement in terms of the election, having the outcome, you know, in a more concrete state, has to help certainty in the markets, at least in some way. Is that your view?
Yeah, I think it could be. I'm not one of those who sees a lot of evidence that Wall Street in particular is especially enamored of one particular candidate or another. And I think very much so for the reasons that you've articulated, that business likes certainty. Entrepreneurs are inherently embrace risk. And the difference is risk is something you can model and you can predict. Uncertainty is something that you have no way to make it, you know, statistical estimates about. And, you know, businesses that are deciding, you know, what their tax policy, what their tax or dividend policies should be, or where they should locate economic activity, are very interrupted by the presence of uncertainty. And so as we get closer to finding out who's going to be president, and what the composition of the House and Senate are going to be, I think that moves some uncertainty into the risk category. It may heighten risk depending on which candidate is hired. But I should also point out that, you know, typically policies from one candidate to the other, you know, may or may not favor a particular industry. And so, you know, without being partisan, if you own stock in alternative energy, you may prefer President Obama. If you're the owner of an alternative energy company, if you're a coal miner, you may prefer President Romney, and so those things would probably even out to some degree in market shocks. And also, I'll just throw this in quickly, is that markets try to incorporate all the available information. That's why markets are such clean statements about, you know, over the long run about economic conditions, is they. They look at everything. They have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people essentially assessing the condition of markets. And so the only thing that would cause sort of a big shock tomorrow would be if the received wisdom about this election were to be entirely wrong. And so that would be an interesting experiment if there is a landslide one way or the other. What happens then to the stock market tomorrow will say, you know, a good deal about what expectations about economic policy are.
Yeah, and one of the things for listeners this morning on Marketplace, I think there were some reports about what Europe is thinking and watching for, and you mentioned a little bit about the import-export impact. Are there other factors you can think of in terms of what Europe might be looking for and what our impact on our economy might be? And that's not the best question I've ever phrased.
No. That's actually pretty smart. I mean, I think there are, Susan, the Europeans are so embraced with their own problems that I think what they look for from America at this juncture are two things that impact their economy. One is support for the types of, and this may be implicit support, for the types of policies that they're trying to foist upon unwilling partners, Greece, Portugal, and others, which are, you know, sort of fix some structural problems in your state and in your country. And at the same time, to continue to shoulder, you know, the excessive burden of international security that the United States bears. And so if you just look at, you know, U.S. Spending on military affairs as a percent of GDP is about a third of what it was in the 1950s. So we have a relatively small military expenditure, you know, relative, like, say, during the Eisenhower years, when we were so very worried about a military-industrial conflict complex. Europe is much less than that, and so there are no European countries. The European Union is really incapable of, for example, you know, mitigating national security problems between, say, a Greece and a Macedonia, which could well erupt, you know, given the political problems in Greece, those sorts of things. And so they're looking for national security and just, you know, sort of soft support for the very tough things they have to do in the years ahead.
We're going to take a quick break here. Professor Hicks, I hope you'll stick around for a few more minutes. We do want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. If you have a question or comment, do give us a call, 260-452-1185, or toll free at 1-800-471-9264. You can also email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. We're at Midday Matters. Stay with us. We'll continue the conversation when we come back.
After a campaign season marked by attack ads, smears, and doubts about the purpose of government, Craig Furman asks, why does anyone run for president? For that matter, why would anyone run for dog catcher? I'm Neil Cunningham, the real reasons people run for public office. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Republican nominee Mitt Romney and President Barack Obama are making their final pitch to voters.
We will turn this country around and create good jobs again.
We've come too far to turn back now.
I'm Melissa Block. Join us on election night for the latest results and analysis all evening long with special coverage from NPR News.
This Tuesday from 7 to 10 p.m. here on 89.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Bob Mayer. Join me Tuesday nights on WBOI for Tossed Jazz Salad, an eclectic mix of assorted styles of jazz with some standards, some bop, a bit of cool, and a pinch of swing. Tuesday nights from 7 to 9.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Lake City Bank, offering a wide range of financial investment and trust services for individuals, businesses, and not-for-profit organizations through the Lake City Bank Wealth Advisory Group. More information available at lakecitybank.com. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne in fall 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum at www.indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
It's 1222. This is Midday Matters Financial Focus on 89.1 FM WBOY. I'm Sean Beter. Very happy to be with you on this election day, November 6, 2012. Along with me, of course, it's Susan Burns for this hour of the program. Susan, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Sean. I sometimes when you say that, I feel like saying yeehaw.
A little bit later in the program, we'll be checking in with the good folks from the Greater Fort Wayne Chamber of Commerce. Right now, though, we have on the line Professor Michael Hicks, the director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State University. Professor Hicks, thank you very much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Sean.
And we talked a bit about kind of the state of the Hoosier economy in terms of manufacturing, exports, Europe's impact on our economy here. One of the things I would like to touch on here before we have to let you go, of course, is the upcoming so-called fiscal cliff. I was wondering if you could kind of briefly package, you know, what that is and what impact that could have on our economy, kind of depending on, well, whether or not Congress comes up with a solution.
You know, that's obviously what's weighing on everyone's mind. So just to bring everybody up to speed, the United States have been borrowing a significant amount of money each year, and Congress authorizes a debt limit typically each year. And the agreement in last fiscal year to extend that debt limit, the borrowing limit of the federal government, there was no way that Congress could reach a resolution on what the combination of tax cuts and or tax increases and spending cuts that different folks wanted. And so they agree to something that people have been calling a fiscal cliff, which is a huge tax increase, elimination of the Bush tax cuts, and all the stimulus-related Social Security tax cuts, which I'll talk about in a minute, and then also spending cuts in the several hundred billion dollar range for both defense and domestic spending programs. And if those hit on December 31st, which is the date at which Congress agreed that that would happen, then you're going to see the sort of elimination of a few government programs like the purchase of F-35s and replacement vehicles for our deployed forces overseas. You're going to see changes to almost all discretionary spending funding, and all of us will see a 2 percentage point increase in our Social Security tax rates for all money up to $110,000, and about 1 in 4 American households will start paying income tax for the first time in 10 years, and the remaining two-thirds of total taxpayers will see a rate increase on their income taxes. So the combination of those things will obviously mean less federal employment, less money through federal programs, and less money for consumers to spend on goods and services, and that's why it's called a fiscal cliff.
And I would think some additional uncertainty inserted into the markets. We talked a little bit about that earlier, but I would imagine if Congress can't come to an accord in time, the markets will not be happy with that.
Well, I think certainly the problem as it plays out isn't just in financial markets. It's going to hit home in, the demand for engine parts, the demand for automobiles is going to shrink because people are, one in four households are going to be paying taxes for the first time in since 2001. Even a high income household, the additional $2,000 in Social Security taxes. It's really a very significant budget balancing act that was designed to force Congress into action. But there's even another wrinkle in it. It looks like we're going to hit our spending limit in December. And so it could be that the federal government closes down for the last 10 days of December. Those sorts of things ought to capture the attention of folks in Congress. Hard telling what a lame duck session will do to it other than punt until the new Congress reconvenes in January and can make decisions that will sit with them differently. Really a very difficult set of decisions for American federal government, both for the long term and the short term.
The tangled webs we weave here. It looks like we have a caller on the line. We'll bring in James. James, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. You alluded to the fact about the economy in Indiana. Now, if you remember, Governor Daniels and a Republican legislator passed the right-to-work law that was supposed to create hundreds of jobs. What happened to those jobs after the law was passed? Could you fill me in on that?
James, we'll put that to Professor Hicks. Thank you very much for your question. Without too partisan today, Professor Hicks, that was a significant debate in the previous legislative sessions.
Sure, it was a fun time by all in Indianapolis. I actually performed a study that said we probably wouldn't have a big spike in manufacturing employment, right away from that. Regardless of how you come down on it, it's clear that it's too early to tell, I think, what the overall effect of right to work would be. If you think that there would be an immediate inflow of jobs, I just don't think that's realistic. Businesses don't adjust to regulatory changes in a matter of months. At the same time, there are folks who are looking at job creation numbers and are beginning to see lots of businesses saying, I'm looking at you because of right to work. My personal feeling is, and as an analyst, is that the right to work law by itself is not going to make a big difference. If you were to impose right to work in Illinois, for example, with all the difficulties that state has, it would not induce businesses to relocate there. In a place that has, low taxes, available labor, and that sorts of things, so business-friendly or market-friendly policies, right to work could well make a difference. And I just think it's too early to tell what the effect of that will be here in Indiana.
James, we appreciate your question. It sounds like a bit too early to tell, but thank you for listening and thanks for your question again. We're just about out of time with you, Professor Hicks, but I did want to ask briefly, this, of course, has been a roller coaster ride of a year in terms of Indiana's agriculture industry. As I understand it, top five producers of corn and of soybeans, along with a number of other crops produced in the state. Can you give us an idea of where that industry stands today? Of course, a lot of Hoosier farmers and a lot of farmers really across the country hurt very badly by the lack of water over the summer.
Right. It was an epic drought. And there's just really no way to gloss over that. What this drought did, which may be different than the 1988 drought, and certainly going back to the very sort of epic droughts of the 1930s, is that it had very differential effects. So there were, I have a friend, for example, in Delaware County who farms in he rents farms in three different counties, and on two of those farms his corn never grew above knee high. And the other one had two of these episodic rain events, and so he had amongst his highest yields ever on those acreage. And so I think what we're seeing are sort of two effects. One is that if you were very damaged by the drought, then you're weeping at the very high corn prices that are being reaped by those who were not affected so heavily by the drought, and you're faced with crop insurance rate protection. And so most of those farms will have survived. If you produce corn and wheat, or corn, wheat, soybeans, then you're getting just astonishingly high prices, and we could see $12 or $13 billion total production in those commodities this year, and so that's fantastic. The people who are more damaged by this, I think, are going to be the producers of pork, beef, and poultry, because they're seeing such high feed prices that they are now, have for the last several weeks been dumping their animals into the market, and that itself means that you're going to see 2 or 3 years of sort of higher costs just because the feed grains are stored and sold over a year or two. And so I think a very differential effect. Overall, we'll be fine if farmers, if at this point you're farming in Indiana and you aren't good at predicting that occasionally you're going to have a tough time of it because of weather and a good year because of it of weather, then it's probably time to get out. But I think most, agriculture in Indiana remains astonishingly important. I actually think will grow in importance through ag tourism, more agricultural, more intensive agricultural in some areas that people are willing to pay high premium for. And then ultimately, I think we're going to see more manufacturing related to agricultural products in Indiana. So I think it will be more important in Indiana 10 years from now than it's ever been, even in the wake of this difficult year for farmers and anybody else who tried to stay cool over the summer.
Just 60 seconds here, Professor Hicks. Could you just paint a very briefly a picture of the reach of Indiana's agriculture industry? Because I seem to recall last year major deals with China, with South Korea, of course, with Europe. Could you expand on that just a little bit briefly?
Well, our corn and soybean products, as they're produced, and most of this stuff is turned into cooking oils and products that are combined in processed foods or prepared foods. We export in that way to probably 150, 160 countries around the world, and that may be a conservative number. So, it employs 3 or 4% of Indiana's population. Provides a significant portion of our tax dollars, probably double that in proportion to employment. It's also a heritage element to the state. It's very few Hoosiers can't trace some experience back to a farm. So it's an important, and as long as people continue to eat or too much like me, that we'll have a robust agricultural economy in Indiana.
Michael Hicks is director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State University. Professor Hicks, thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Good to be with you.
Have a very good day. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll check in with our friends from the Greater Fort Wayne Chamber of Commerce. And, of course, we do invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation today. The number is 260-452-1185. You can email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. We're at Midday Matters. Stay with us. The news is up next.
After months of heated campaigning and over $1 billion in ads, it all comes down to November 6th, when the voters pick a president and a new Congress. NPR News will be on the air all evening long with the latest results and analysis, plus our reporters out with candidates across the nation. I'm Robert Siegel. Join us for special coverage of Election Night from NPR News.
This Tuesday from 7 to 10 p.m. here on 89.1 FM.
Northeast Indiana Public Radio invites you to join us for a special afternoon of great classical music Saturday, November 10th. Pianist Wayne McEvely will perform the music of Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, and Chopin in the Sweetwater Performance Theater. Admission is free, but donations are welcome, so join us for a delightful afternoon of wonderful piano performance Saturday, November 10th at 4 p.m. More information is available at nipr.fm.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah DeLeo at WBOI News. There are about 255,000 registered voters in Allen County, and if you're one of them, there are several things to remember before heading out to the polls today. First and foremost, know where you're voting. You can do this by going to www.indianavoters.in.gov. Polls are open from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Anyone in line at 6 p.m., granted that you are in the correct polling location, will be allowed to vote. A photo ID is required to verify your identity. If you've moved but never updated your voter registration information, you'll have to head back to your old precinct to vote. and Director of Allen County Elections, Beth DeLug, cannot stress enough. Do not go to the Allen County Election Board office to vote on Election Day.
We are not voting anyone at this location, so I don't want anybody to get confused and think because we were open for early voting that we can actually vote them on Election Day. On Election Day, they need to go to the polling location close to their home.
DeLug suggests that the best times to vote are mid-morning and mid-afternoon, but you can't go wrong by bringing a book or Kindle in case there's a line. With another strong month of state revenue collection, Indiana appears headed for a significant surplus next summer. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
State revenues last month were $24 million ahead of the most recent forecasts, keeping the state on track to nearly double its fiscal projections. Indiana ended its last fiscal year with around $2 billion in reserves and should end the current fiscal year in the black as well. Gubernatorial candidates John Gregg and Mike Pence have both proposed significant tax cuts that could dip into those reserves, and House Republicans say they want to start restoring money to programs cut or reduced during the recession. But Gregg, Pence, and state lawmakers all preach caution, emphasizing the need to keep an adequate reserve level to shield from the potential of another economic downturn. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
Indiana health officials say four people have now died from fungal meningitis linked to injections of a recalled back pain medication. State Department of Health spokesman Ken Severson also said Monday Indiana now has 51 cases of the rare disease. Officials did not say where the fourth death occurred. Severson says officials cannot discuss individual cases due to privacy laws. Elkhart County's health officer has said three deaths are linked to the northern Indiana county. The state health agency has said six Indiana clinics received the tainted steroids, including the OSMC Outpatient Surgery Center in Elkhart. The tainted steroids have been traced to the New England Compounding Center of Framingham, Massachusetts. The Indiana Supreme Court has agreed to delay disciplinary action against former Secretary of State Charlie White. The State Disciplinary Commission suspended White's law license in April following his February conviction on felony charges, including voter fraud, perjury, and theft. White was removed from office due to the convictions. Last week, the Supreme Court granted White's request to stay further disciplinary action until all of his appeals have been completed. The charges stemmed from using his ex-wife's address as his voting address when he was serving on the Fishers Town Council and running for Secretary of State in 2010. White's sentence of a year on home detention has been stayed while he appeals his convictions. White did not return phone calls and emails seeking comment on Monday. Federal agents have arrested 40 people during an immigration sweep in the Indianapolis area. Immigration and Customs Enforcement said Monday that 37 men and 3 women who were arrested include convicted criminal aliens, immigration fugitives, and immigration violators. The agency says 25 have prior convictions for crimes including assault, domestic battery, drunken driving, and drug charges. 13 have previously been ordered to leave the country but did not go. 4 have illegally re-entered the U.S. after being deported. 33 of those arrested are from Mexico. ICE says others are from El Salvador, Cuba, Guatemala, Honduras, India, and Peru. The 3-day sweep ended Sunday. And now back to your host for Midday Matters, Sean Beter.
It's 20 minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, and this is Midday Matters Financial Focus on 89.1 FM WBOY. I'm Sean Beter. Thanks very much for being with us today on this Election Day 2012. Susan Burns is with me in the studio, of course. Thanks very much for being here, Susan.
Glad to, and I'm also glad to note that we have a couple of guests from the Greater Fort Wayne Chamber of Commerce. We have Michelle Merritt, who's the Vice President of, Communications.
and Member Relations.
Member Relations, okay. And John Swearens, who's the Director of Communications. And yes, we invited you because we got our notices that it's almost time for a taste of the chamber, and it said, the last.
It said the final taste, didn't
yeah.
it? It did. Well, thank you for having us, first of all. We will be hosting the final Taste of the Chamber this year, and it's caused a few folks some panic, I think, as they've read that. And as you're well aware, we have sold the Chamber building to St. Francis. And as a result, that building has been a vital part of that Taste of the Chamber. So we're not saying that we will never do a tasting event again, but we are saying that the Taste of the Chamber as it exists today will be its grand finale. So,
it seems like this is a period where you can start to look at change, in whether it's the Taste of the Chamber or other programming, which we can talk about in a little bit here. I do want to, though, remind our listeners that they can be a part of the conversation, 260-452-1185. If you have a question for Michelle or John, you can also email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet @middaymatters.
Right. And so as we're thinking about changes, where are you going to go next?
Well, what we know is that we will remain downtown, because we know that downtown is centrally located for all of our members. We have 1,700 members in the surrounding community. So we know that downtown Fort Wayne is central for us. Last I hear from our relocation committee, we are down from 12 possible locations to 5, with a promise that we will have one selected near the end of the year. So we're hard at work exploring spaces downtown and trying to determine what the needs are of a new facility.
But you're not exactly packing up your desks and...
Exactly. Well, we're actually selling some of them because St. Francis pretty much wants the building, and they're going to furnish it themselves because they have other plans for it. So, yes, we are starting to see what do we need to take with us, what needs to be disposed of, because when you're in a building since the 1920s, you don't necessarily want to move all of that stuff. Some of that stuff can be safely disposed of.
Right. Or donated to a historical group.
For exactly. Matter.
We've been in that building for 84 years.
Wow.
So we're anxious to see what's in every closet and every corner of the basement that maybe we've forgotten about, and start to explore all of those things.
Good. But you said you'll still be there till June, I think?
Mm-hmm. Till June. So. We have till June to make the relocation. So we'll begin packing and, as John mentioned, selling some of the furniture and things like that. We're trying to convince our chamber president we need to at least keep our desks and our chairs until the last day, but you never know how we'll end up at the end.
Nothing wrong with throwing a few pillows on the floor,
right,
and sitting with the laptop, I suppose.
All working from a desktop, that's desktop right. table, that's
standing
great.
Standing phone calls.
Sure.
Yes, I'm looking at beanbag chairs just in case.
The chamber is taking on a new look. We talked about this a little bit the last time you all were with us, but you mentioned you're trying to stay downtown.
Yes.
But why? I mean, I'm sure there may be more affordable properties, or even properties that may be better suited to the chamber's needs elsewhere in Fort Wayne. Why stay in that part of town?
Primarily because of the central location of downtown. Lots of people come into downtown to do business every day, and this puts us right in the middle of most of our membership. If you look at our membership, it really does spread out all around Fort Wayne. So to choose one side of town or another, to choose the north side or the southwest side or something like that, really doesn't make the best sense for our members. To be in the middle of where most of them are makes the most sense for us logistically.
And actually, St. Francis, University of St. Francis, actually makes the argument for us also. One reason they want to locate their business school downtown in our building is because it's hooked in so much with the commerce community in Fort Wayne, and that's good for their students, and I think good for Fort Wayne in general to have a stronger downtown with 300 more students just using our facility. You know what I mean.
Adjusting.
Who owns it
We're
right
a little
now,
attached
I don't know.
To the building, right?
I imagine. So. Well, 84 years at the same location, you grow attachments. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment for Michelle or John today. And very briefly, before we get into some of the new exciting material here, can you talk a little bit about how the process has been with St. Francis? John, you mentioned that they chose that location for a very specific reason. It works out for both organizations. Do you foresee more collaboration with St. Francis in the future? And how's the process gone?
Absolutely. We work with all of the area schools. You know, we have our graduate retention program that's housed out of the chamber, which is the program to help internships, businesses match up with internships throughout the Northeast Indiana area. And so we work with all of the schools on a regular basis to partner with the business community. You know, we all need each other in this community, and we all want to encourage young people to stay in Fort Wayne and continue to find some of the great opportunities that we have all found living here. So in doing that, we're partnering on a regular basis, not only with St. Francis, but also with Tech and with IPFW, with Ivy Tech, with Manchester, and all of the area schools as well.
Looks like we have a caller on the line here, and of course, we invite you to join us today. Toll-free 1-800-471-9264, or you can always call our local line. It's 260-452-1185. Let's open the phones and go to Dave. Dave, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Well, hi, and good afternoon. I've eaten lunch at the Chamber several times years ago, but I've never been quite clear, and perhaps your guests can clear this up for me. What is the mission, the purpose of the Chamber of Commerce here in Fort Wayne?
A very good question, Dave, and a very big question, Michelle and John.
Maybe they can do it in 25 words or less.
we're not quite that limited, but panelists, go for it.
Yeah, well, our mission is for the good of the business community, and to do whatever we can, especially for our members, those who have joined the chamber, to help to ensure that business environment stays vital, and to do what we can to help them. For example, through legislative efforts, we're going to be having next month our legislative preview, talking to with our government affairs staff about how we're going to relate to our local and state officials, about what can be done to help make doing business in Fort Wayne a step easier, and also.
Well, when you're talking about government officials, I mean, I think we've heard a lot about the chamber's efforts with the state house, but does that apply to local officials as well?
Absolutely.
Say the Fort Wayne City Council, the mayor's office, things like that.
Actually, yes, our new government affairs vice president, who's Katie Stafford Cunningham, she has made quite a great effort of making sure to keep those local ties open and tight, so that way we have a good connection with them. So when our members have issues or concerns or anything, like how in the world does this local government work, from zoning to any other kinds of issues they may have, they're welcome to contact her, and then she can, when her staff can help, at least either pave the way or at least answer the questions about how these things operate.
So if I understand you correctly, it's essentially for businesses, am I correct?
Yeah, our focus really is on the greater Fort Wayne business community. So we're here, I always say we're here to advocate and elevate for businesses in the community. We're here to make business better in Fort Wayne. And by businesses being our members, that also makes all of their employees our members as well.
I see. Does the chamber ever involve itself in the electoral politics?
Not directly, no. There is a business PAC here in Fort Wayne, and there are several chamber members who sit on that PAC, but we simply advocate for the business community. So we do have a legislative agenda. It will be announced on December 11th and shared with the membership, and there's a legislative council that sits on that group and determines how it is we're going to lobby for the members.
So the chamber then does not engage itself in the electoral politics. Am I hearing you correctly?
Well,
or not?
I guess we do not advocate for particular politicians, but we do advocate for particular policies
that may be advocated by certain politicians.
You're right. I mean, certainly individual politicians will be holding certain policies. Mm-hmm. But,
and to kind of pick up on that, Michelle and John, would, as these policies are developed, that the chamber then, through their committee structure, chooses to advocate for, does it sometimes turn into a bit of a chicken and egg thing where, you know, sometimes the business community says we want this policy, sometimes then the politicians get on board with it, seeking chamber membership support?
I think our government affairs team is working very diligently with the membership to match up members who can help support a cause that is important to the overall membership. Yeah. And then be able to even ask them to testify or to share experiences, et cetera, during session.
Because as I recall, and maybe I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think the chamber is a type of nonprofit that's allowed to do advocacy.
Correct.
For your members.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah.
What is that, 501c4 or what?
Something like
501c6, actually.
Dave, we're late for a break here, but...
Well, I was just going to say that I've eaten my apple, and that's the last of my lunch here, so I'm going to hang up. And I want to commend you, Sean, and everybody else that has a part of Midday Matters for a good job. Well done.
You're very kind, Dave. Thank you so much.
Yep, you bet.
All right. I hope you had a great lunch and have a great day. We're going to take just a quick break here, and we'll finish up the conversation when we return. Do stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, renowned neurologist Oliver Sacks talks about his new book, Hallucinations. We'll discuss how grief, trauma, brain injury, medications, and neurological disorders can trigger hallucinations. We'll also talk about his personal experimentation with hallucinogenic drugs in the 1960s. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
President Barack Obama and Republican nominee Mitt Romney have been visiting many battleground states in their final weeks of campaigning.
Thank you, Virginia.
Hello, Colorado.
Thank you, Iowa.
Hello, Ohio.
The race for the White House is coming to an end. I'm Melissa Block. Join us tonight for results and analysis all evening long. Special coverage of Election Night from NPR News.
This Tuesday from 7 to 10 p.m. here on 89.1 FM.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Lutheran Hospital, providing procedures for heart failure patients that keep their treatment in Fort Wayne, close to home. Information at lutheranhealth.net.
It's about 6 minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock. It's Midday Matters Financial Focus on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Susan Burns this afternoon. And joining us from the Greater Fort Wayne Chamber of Commerce, it's John Swearens and Michelle Merritt. Thank you very much to both of you for being with us today. And we just have a few moments here, but we do want to invite our listeners to call and get their voices in under the wire, 260-452-1185, if you have a question or comment. Or you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. We are at Midday Matters.
We are indeed. And so we've kind of hinted a little, and Sean mentioned it earlier, but... I think you have some stuff coming up, and I would like to hear more about what's ahead for the chamber.
We do. We mentioned Taste of the Chamber being Thursday, December 6th. It is just $10 to attend. It is the cheapest holiday date you will have in town. So that's always a big event, and that is not members only. That is open to the entire community. We do ask that you be over 21 when you attend. We will have between 30 to 40 vendors, which will be either caterers, restaurants, wineries, etc., that will be there with all kinds of samples. So once you pay your $10 and get through the door, it's there for you to just overindulge in, I'm sure. That's what I do every year. So it's a great, you'll see the chamber building dressed for the holidays. So it's very much a holiday festive sort of event. And you can make those reservations online to do that at fwchamber.org/events. Or it's $15 at the door. But we do encourage you. We have about 700, we have between 700 and 750 people through the door last year. And people who've registered in advance do get priority to get in the door. So we do encourage you to register online ahead of time if you're going to do that.
And it's a bit of a send-off, as we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. It's the
that
last
grand
time
finale.
You're going to be able to have it in the building.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a big deal. Some other things coming up for us moving forward into 2013. We host a series of summits. We started those last year, which are educational formats that are half-day sessions that are on topics geared toward the business community. They're for businesses to be able to gain information from local experts. One of the key things we try to do is bring in local experts so that their faces and names that you recognize and that you trust to lead these sessions. Some topics coming up this year include a media and marketing summit, how to work with the media, and how to work with PR folks around the community and, you know, maybe handle something that's a little challenging that comes up in your business or something like that. So, Sean, we'll probably be calling you to come in and speak. Be prepared. We'll also do a sales summit for sales professionals in May. We'll do a social media summit over the summer, and social media is always popular and it's always ever changing. So It's great up-to-date information on that. And then we will do an HR summit in the fall, which we did one this past fall as well. So on some HR law and whatever those technicalities are that HR folks need to be aware of.
We have just about 90 seconds here before we have to end the conversation for today. Folks can find out about all those events at fwchamber.org, right?
Absolutely. Okay. One thing I'll throw in there real quick in these last 90 seconds is our upcoming 10 by 10 in April. Mm-hmm. Last year, we called it a 10 by 18. We invite 10 community leaders to come out and speak for 10 minutes this year on the secret of their success. Some notable names in town have already agreed to be our speakers for this year. People like Pat Sullivan from Highland, Don Schinkel from St. Francis, Patty Hayes from Lutheran Hospital, Deborah Williams from Parkview Hospital, Dr. Schneider from Indiana Tech, and Michael Hayes. So those are just a few that we have confirmed that will be great speakers and give some great advice to our members.
A very busy schedule.
It is.
In the last few seconds here, I want to ask you both. I mean, we touched on it over the course of this segment, but how do you feel now? I mean, this is a big move. Going into new digs and, you know, a new time for the chamber. Michelle, how do you feel about
it? Crazy excited. Yeah, absolutely. We know that there are some great things ahead for the chamber. We've been in business now over 135 years, and this is just a few. And we know that from this point forward, it's new ways and new ideas on how we serve the chamber and our members. So we're super excited about that.
John Swearin said, what's your outlook?
Yeah, absolutely. Very excited to see what's going to happen around the corner now. It does free us up to be able to do some other things that with the building, it was an expense. So we feel like we've given the building, given it into very good hands, some people who really understand how to take care of a historic building, and we're going to be able to free to be able to do even better programming for our members next year.
Well, I imagine we'll check in with you all soon to see how things are progressing. John Swearins, Michelle Merritt, thank you both very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Susan Burns, thank you as well.
Thank you, Sean.
Thanks to Dave and to James for calling in with their questions and comments today. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. We're coming up on 1 o'clock. Fresh Air is next. Have a great day.